Hey everyone, welcome to Wednesday's edition of A Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. We've got an exciting show happening today. Lots of young musicians are gathered in the next room, and they'll be in here in just a minute celebrating Juno Music Night. It's the Juno String Ensemble, and we'll be talking to their teacher, to some of the parents, and to a bunch of the kids about a really cool program coming up. They're going to be doing a special concert Saturday night, 7 p.m. at Northern Lights Church, the annual fundraiser for their group, and this year helping fund a bunch of the students going over to China. Really cool trip. We'll be talking to them about that. 4-H Outdoor Skills Club meeting are happening Tuesday and Thursdays, and we'll be talking to folks about that. Also, Community Schools Overview. We'll be talking to three instructors there. Treasures from the State Film Archives is a sound and motion presentation happening at UAS, and we'll be speaking to a couple of the UAS members about that, and the report from Eagle Crest coming up as well. And here we're having cloudy skies today with light snow showers in the forecast and scattered rain showers in the afternoon, with snow accumulation up to an inch and highs around 36 degrees today. And for tonight, a chance of snow in the evening, snow likely late with accumulation up to about an inch, and snow showers happening tomorrow as well. So a bit of a change in the weather. Right now, here is National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The tribal liaison for Wisconsin's Natural Resources Office may have her hands full. She was named to the post after concerns about tribal-state relations. Chuck Kornbach reports.
Some Native American leaders are upset with the administration of Wisconsin Republican Governor Scott Walker. The points of dispute include the state's wolf hunting season and the taconite mine proposed near the Bad River Chippewa Reservation. So the state has asked Shelley Allness to leave her tribal liaison post at the Wisconsin Department of Tourism and take that same role with the Department of Natural Resources. The DNR wouldn't make Allness available for an interview, and one of her new bosses, Kurt Thede, downplays any past problems with the tribes.
What we're really trying to do here with the central coordinator role is to make sure that communications are coming to a central location and that we're very cognizant of the follow-up needed on a variety of issues.
Journalist Paul Demain of IndianCountryTV.com says he's glad to hear that Shelley Allness has experience working with the tribes. But Demain says according to what he's heard from tribal leaders, Allness will have her hands full.
She steps into a hotbed as compared to, I think, 10, 15 years ago, when it seemed to me that there were people who understood the co-management, and I stress that again, co-management of the resources that have been reserved for both Ojibwe people and the public.
Demain says the state of Wisconsin is going to have to get a better handle on government-to-government protocols and relationships. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Kornbach.
The U.S. Attorney for North Dakota, Tim Purdon, has been named leader of the Native American Issues Subcommittee. The group, made up of 30 U.S. attorneys from across the country, aims to improve public safety on reservations. The Department of Justice Subcommittee also makes policy recommendations to the Attorney General. According to the Associated Press, safety on reservations in North Dakota has been a top priority to Purdon, who looks forward to addressing Native issues on a national level. New Mexico has been awarded a grant to help Native Americans avoid financial fraud. The Native Community Finance Group will use the $50,000 award for an outreach campaign, which will begin in coming weeks. The effort is to encourage people to learn about financial security and investments. The move comes after Native people from across the state and country are benefiting from the Cobell Indian Trust settlement of more than $3 billion. According to the Associated Press, the New Mexico Regulation and Licensing Department says con artists know who to target when settlement dollars roll in. The financial seminars are expected to be held in Native communities across the state. Montana lawmakers reject a state gun after objections from Native American representatives. On Tuesday, the measure to name the Winchester Model 1873 as the state rifle was defeated. Supporters say its intention was to memorialize an important symbol from the frontier era. According to the Associated Press, language was taken out that called it the gun that won the West. Native lawmakers argued the gun still carries bad memories. It was used to slaughter bison and was also used in massacres. The House proposal was defeated 61 to 39. On this day in 1976, Leonard Peltier was arrested and extradited from Canada to face charges for his involvement in the killing of two FBI agents on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. The Anishinaabe and Lakota man was tried and convicted and has been in prison for more than three decades. Currently, in a Florida prison, Peltier continues to claim unjust imprisonment and has been seeking clemency for years. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, with funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC-CLIC-GIVE when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon, where I have been joined by a whole bunch of people in the studio here. It's very exciting. Lots of stringed instruments here. Lots of students poised to make beautiful sound come out of those instruments. Can we just go around the room and just ask each one of you your names? Who's over there on and what instrument you play?
My name is Li Ming. I'm playing cello.
Okay.
I'm Kalia, and I'm playing the viola part, but I'm actually playing a violin.
Oh, you're playing a sort of full-size violin, but it's the part in the music that's written for viola originally. Okay, great.
My name's Colum, and I'm playing the violin.
All right.
My name is Taze, and I'm playing the violin also.
Okay, great. And this is called the Family Quartet, right?
Yes.
That's the name of this. And also in the studio with us is Mary Ellison. Mary, thanks so much for coming in. And also Diane Anteya, how you doing?
Good, thanks for having
and
us.
And we'll just talk to you, Diane, just real briefly about, tell me a little bit about what's going on here. There's going to be a chamber music night concert happening Saturday, 7 p.m., Northern Lights Church. Tell me about what's happening there.
Sure. This group is one of many groups who will perform on Saturday night at Juno String Ensemble's annual event called Chamber Music Night. Chamber Music Night is happening at 7 o'clock on Saturday at at Northern Lights United Church. And we do this every year. It's a chance to showcase fine musicians who have been working very hard. I mean, their pieces are polished, their bows are all together, their dynamics are exciting, and the intonation's perfect. So they are, we're showcasing their efforts and a style of music that's more traditional to chamber music.
Cool. Well, I know you've got two pieces that you can do today. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's have you do one, and then we'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the concert and about what the funds are going to go towards and some of the exciting stuff that you guys are involved in. So let's hear the first one. What's the name of this piece?
Buffalo Gals.
Buffalo Gals. Here it is. Here's the Family Quartet, one of the groups you can hear Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Northern Lights Church.
One, two, ready, go.
great. Thanks so much for playing that, you guys. That was really fun. Now, I'll just ask you, is there a part of that that's maybe a little bit harder, or is there a piece of that that you feel like is like, oh, we got past that one part in the song? Is there something like that that happens?
The tiny bit of the beginning part.
Okay.
The one that starts off the song.
Right. Okay. And is that a pretty fun piece to play, I would think. It's got that staccato kind of dun-dun-dun-dun, right? We should mention your teacher was behind me that whole time conducting. Mr. Aguosha is here as well. So thanks so much for coming in as well and for teaching these great kids. So Diane and Mary, I'll just ask you guys a little bit more about what's happening Saturday night. That's an example of some of the great music people hear, but there's also some other groups as well, right?
That's right. The Family Quartet is one of our very beginning quartets. And the nice thing about coming to Chamber Music Night is you will see duets, you will see quartets, and you will see large ensembles. And you'll see our very beginning duets and then our really advanced duet, our very beginning ensemble and our very advanced ensemble. So it's really a great opportunity to see where children start and where they can end up.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Family Quartet just formed this year. Our advanced quartet is very accomplished, and they are now playing at memorials in town and weddings and events. So
they're gigging.
They got a business card if you want one.
And you know, Andy, where they can end up is pretty exciting because a lot of people have heard and really helped us out this year. But the Aurora Strings will be performing as well. Are headed to China with Mr. Shaw this spring.
And we saw them out busking
you
in
did,
the summer, right?
Yeah,
that was so cool.
There's a couple of things I just wanted to say about that. One is, first of all, the Juno String Ensemble is really committed to developing ensembles so the kids can listen to each other and so they can work as a team, and you're going to be able to see that Saturday night.
Now, does that help you? Is it help to? It helps you, right, to play with other musicians, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is it about playing with other musicians that sort of makes it easier or makes you able to learn more? Is there something about working with other people who are going through the same stuff?
It's more happy and cheerful, I guess.
It's just more fun.
Yeah, more fun.
Yeah, so it's great to when you're learning, when you're having fun, you're kind of learning without it being mm-hmm. too much work. Yeah, cool.
And almost every one of the musicians takes private lessons, individual. But learning to play in a group and holding on to your part while someone is doing something else entirely different next to you is a very tough skill. And
that
so
is.
That's what we're doing with the Juno String Ensemble.
I have that problem with my left and right hand, let alone other people. Yeah.
And that's what the smaller groups that are coming out of here had the opportunity to do all summer. And in doing that, they raised 30% of their fundraising goal for China, about $19,000 from the tourists, but also contributing to the flavor and cultural health of our community. The other thing to jump
in. A great direct way of using tourism dollars to benefit culture in Juneau. That's a really cool way.
I can tell you, every dollar counted.
Yeah.
It really did.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is just another series of fundraisers to get towards that overall goal. About $75,000 is the overall goal, right?
Right.
So there are about $20,000 towards the goal now. Is that right?
We're over $30,000 for our goal because they've also picked up litter.
Okay.
We have an amazing group of parent volunteers who have written grants. The tickets for Chamber Music Night, I should mention that the adult ticket is $10. All of that goes directly to Juno String Ensemble to help this group get to China. So it's one of our last major fundraising efforts. But
just to jump into Diane, and the name of our concert is From the Great Land to the Great Wall. And one more plug for those of you who aren't going to the concert, because we have a great community, is that our Kickstarter campaign, if you want to give by just clicking, is we'll start next week. And you can just get on Juno or Music or From the Great Land to the Great Wall, and you'll be able to donate. We have a goal for the next 30 days. So I know some people like a non-event for their event.
Right, right.
But the great thing would be to come and see these young musicians perform this
weekend. Yeah, I get the benefit of hearing all these great music.
Yeah.
And it's kids 6 years old all the way up to 18 years old are involved in this. So it's a full gamut of kids. And is there a way, if someone's out there thinking, well, I'd like my kid to get involved with that, or if there's a 17-year-old out there wanting to get involved, how do they do that?
Well, they can contact Juno String Ensembles. We have a website, or I can throw a phone number out there if people are wanting that, 586 2921 to get information about how to join, because we do have musicians that are joining all the time as it fits into their own goals and their ability. They are certainly welcome to join.
Cool. Let's hear one more piece of music, and we can talk a little bit more after that, too. But you know what I wanted to ask you guys? Just go around the room one more time and ask you, how long have each of you been playing your instrument? How long have you been playing?
Well, I've been playing for 6 years.
6 years, okay, yeah. And how about you?
I've been playing for 5 years.
Five, okay.
7 years.
And how about you? How long have you been playing?
I only been playing for a year.
Only a year? Well, I couldn't tell. You're advanced beyond your years of playing. Very cool. All right, what's the name of this next one?
Rondo Spritzo.
Rondo Spritzo. Okay, sounds sophisticated. Here it comes. This is the family quartet. Once again, you'll be able to hear these guys playing Saturday, 7 p.m. at the Northern Lights Church, and here they are. Awesome. You guys, the timing on that was great. You did a great job on that. That was beautiful. And that's a fun one. Plucking at the end is super fun, too. Thanks, you guys. That was really wonderful. Well, just to wrap up, one more thing. I think, Mary, you were wanting to say one more thing about the program in general. And
I could say a million things, but what I want to do is really, like every good project, this takes a village. And there's a lot of people involved that need to be thanked. But one of them is certainly Mr. Sean, the musicians, and all of the businesses and community members and organizations who have supported us. Andy, there's so many. And also, Laurie Hagee will be there with the Jam group that's nationally acclaimed with Mr. Shaw. And Lisa Miles is going to be there supporting our efforts. And she's another Suzuki teacher in town. So thanks to everybody and all the parents as well.
Well, as you say, I mean, it takes a lot of effort to get kids to be able to play music this beautifully. So thanks so much to all of you for coming in. I really appreciate it. That was fantastic. I feel like I had my own little live concert here for free.
Yeah.
This was great.
Well, good. And if you need more, Andy, remember, 7 o'clock, Northern Lights Church, $10 for you and any other adult. Students are free. And we hope to see you there. We have a really nice door.
I thought
price
I was going to get
too.
That comped. What happened? No.
Yeah, maybe.
$10. I'll pay it willingly. I'll pay it willingly. And more information on this great group at junostrings.org. Once again, thanks you guys for coming in. 7 o'clock, Northern Lights Church. It's going to be a great time there.
All right, thank you, Andy.
Okay, thanks. the beautiful music there of Jake Shumabukuru, who you'll be able to see on Monday, February 11th, this upcoming Monday at the Juno Douglas High School. Amazing. He's coming to town. It's going to be a great concert, but they're getting close to sold out. So Juno Jazz and Classics, jazzandclassics.org is a place to go to find more information on Jake Shumabukuru, master of the ukulele. Darren Snyder's with us now. How you doing?
Great, Andy.
And you're here to talk about some of the really cool things happening at the 4-H Outdoor Skills Club.
That's right.
Yeah, and some other things, too. You've got so much stuff going on. We'll talk about all of it. But tell me about this upcoming 4-H Outdoor Skills Family Club. There's some opportunities for people to kind of get involved on the ground floor, figure out how to be involved, whether you're a parent or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
It is. So if you are interested in getting outdoors and enjoying some of the Alaskan lifestyle type of opportunities that are all around us, then this is a great chance. 4-H serves kindergarten through high school age youth. And
let's talk about 4-H, because I think of 4-H, right? I've got the idea of it's the county fairs, and you're raising gigantic pigs.
Okay.
That's
well,
4-H.
Right. Well, we do have the fairs.
But there's other stuff, too, I'm sure, right?
Yep, there sure is.
So tell me about it.
We do have agricultural roots, 100 years ago is when it got established. But up here, we do it Alaskan style, and that means that we are serving the public in whatever people are interested in doing. And having more opportunities. There are a lot of people who come up here and, we're right at the edge of being able to, with all these opportunities around us, but somebody might not have come to Juno with some understanding of, how do I get outside and how do I use a GPS? How do I get my family out hiking, out camping, out being safe in boats? How do I help my family be safe around firearms and learn how to hunt?
It's so key, isn't it? Because,
yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. Alaska is such a beautiful place where we all are involved in the outdoors all the time, but you have to be smart about it.
Yep.
You have to be kind of have a little bit of training, really, is a great way to approach it, because going out in the woods here can become a very serious situation very quickly if you're not prepared.
Absolutely. And, we do have lots of opportunities to do this kind of educational activities. Kids have Discovery Southeast, a plug for that awesome organization, in the schools. But this is a chance for the kids and the their parents to learn together and to empower those families to do these cool things. And, we have camps in the summertime. We have our Sustainable Harvest Camp. But this is an ongoing club, and it's the Outdoor Skills, 4-H Outdoor Skills Club. And it's open to all school ages, but if there's enough interest at the different age levels, then we can have like a teen club and other type of opportunities. And 4-H provides great opportunities for traveling, to doing exchange, foreign exchange to other countries, to other places in the United States, and going to conferences, and great leadership opportunities for older youth.
It's really become such a... What are the 4-H's?
Head, heart, hands, and health.
Okay, right. So it covers a whole bunch of stuff, right?
It does.
And training, just purely training on the head and all that stuff, and health and getting outdoors and all that. But it's so cool that the 4-H has kind of grown into this incredibly diverse thing, and it seems like there's not many areas in the world where it's kind of needed more and could be more helpful and more fun to do than in Alaska. And I know you also it partners with Fish and Game in some ways as well, right?
Yes, we do. We have wonderful partners in Fish and Game with the Forest Service as well. Carrying the torch forward with this specific club, I'm partnering with Fish and Game educator Tenny Bentz, who is new to this job and serving this region, following the footsteps of Kristen Romanoff, and so she and Fish and Game are wonderful partners to help make this happen. We've got really good horsepower behind this whole effort. So we have community volunteers who are lined up and ready to help us out with all these different skill sets. The firearm safety, shooting sports, fishing skills. We're going to get into fly tying. We're going to survival skills.
Yeah.
All kinds of great stuff. So, if your family's interested in that, then just all you got to do is give me a call. My number is 796-6281. And again, this is the Cooperative Extension Service 4-H. And And we're meeting on both Tuesdays and Thursdays, kind of in a rotational pattern. So you got to pay attention to which date. But our basic meetings are going to be on every Tuesday. And then our firearm safety and when we're meeting out at the indoor range is going to be on the first and third Thursdays.
Now, I know that, like, this upcoming Tuesday, I'm looking at one of your flyers, and it says basic skills is going to be the thing talked about this upcoming Tuesday. What sort of gets covered there?
Well, you know, it's all based on what's going on outside because, again, this is outdoor skills, and so we want people to experience, you know, what does it take to build a fire outside? What do you need? What can you do and what can't you do? If you're hiking, if you're boating, if you're whatever it is, and creating some scenarios where we're really ground truthing. You know, a lot of people think, oh, all you need to light a fire in Southeast is this.
Yeah.
And well, you know, that might work, it might not. But this is a chance for us all to learn together and to share that as well. Different types of stoves for getting familiar with that, because there are a lot of different options around this stuff. And just to, again, kind of empower and train people to get more familiar with what their options are.
You know, it's all the statistics you read about when people kind of get into trouble in Alaska, often it's because they've made an assumption because things have always worked that way in the past for them.
Mm-hmm.
Even people who've even grown up here or have been here for, you know, 20, 30 years, you kind of make the assumption, oh, well, I've always started a fire that way, or I've always worn that kind of gear, or it's never been a problem.
Yep.
And then, you know, you get into a problem.
Yep.
I can't encourage people enough to get really some formal training, just to go do the normal stuff and know that you kind of got that in your back pocket. Like,
yep.
Okay, I know what I'm doing here. I'm not going to get into, even if bad things happen, I won't get into serious trouble because I'll be able to kind of have the resources and have the training. Yeah.
Yeah. Practicing the decision-making process when you're out in conditions. But the main idea is for us to get out and have fun and to have our that comfort that you are able to take care of yourself in the unlikely event that you're going to run into an emergency. But mostly this is just about getting out and having fun as a family and us providing you that opportunity. We have resources to help people with gear if that's an issue, because it's a huge issue. You know, if you've got the right jacket or if you got the right pants or you got the right boots or not, makes the entire difference on whether you're going to have a successful outing or not. So we can help people with that. So don't let that be a barrier, please. I don't know how much time we have, but maybe we could jump.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, I don't
Come
know.
Come on, let's go. You had another thing you wanted to talk about,
yeah,
too, as well, right? Another thing to talk about, yeah.
It's jumping right up here. We've got a what we're calling Gardening in Southeast Alaska 101. So,
okay, yes.
So,
because it is specialized,
yeah,
right?
Very much so. There are lots of ways of doing it right and doing it wrong and all that. As many of you out there in Radioland know, we do have a Master Gardener program through the Extension Service. And my strategy here as your Extension agent is to offer that on a every other year basis, with the opposite year being that we're going to do a beginning gardener class, and that's what this is. So a lot of folks in the community are interested in doing their gardens, and we're focusing on food gardens with this series. It's going to be a series of six classes starting next Wednesday evening, and so it'll be Wednesday evenings and Saturday mornings for the next 3 weeks. So a
cool.
Total of six sessions, and then with follow-up sessions being in further in the spring for our different projects and seed planting. And we have, again, a number of experts lined up for us. It's going to be an excellent class. So
that's cool, because, you know, it always sneaks up on you.
Oh, yeah.
That planting season, you know, you think, it's the dead of winter. And then all of a sudden, it's spring, and you haven't gotten everything in the ground, and you're behind, and the nasturtiums are never going to bloom at this rate, you know, and all that stuff happens. So that's a really great thing that it's, you know, let's start thinking about it now. There might be certain things you could be even doing now as far as, like, cultivating stuff or, you know,
ordering
getting stuff ready.
Seeds.
All that stuff, yeah, right.
Planning, getting your materials together for doing your starts, but don't start them too early because, they won't be ready to get in the ground. And so there's a lot to know about gardening here, even if you're an expert gardener from elsewhere, or even if you've given it a try here, go ahead and give me a call again. That 796-6281, and I can help you get back to you, and then I'll help you get signed up and registered for the class. The class is $150 for those for this series and then the follow-up activities as well. So it's going to be a great community of growers to support each other, do some gardening projects with each other, and learn together. And you're very welcome to join us.
Cool. Well, thanks, Darren, so much for letting us know about all the great stuff, 4-H, and then also the community gardening stuff that's happening. Yeah. Thanks again. Yeah. That's Darren Snyder and the 4-H Outdoor Skills Family Club. The next meeting of that is Tuesday coming up. It's Basic Skills, and it meets at Greening Park Recreation Center at 6:30. And once again, you can contact Darren at 796-6281 if you're interested in getting involved in any of the stuff you've just talked about.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
All right. Thank you. On Monday, February 11th, Juno Jazz and Classics presents Jake Shimabukuro, ukulele playing like it's never been done here before. Compared to artists as wide-ranging as Jimi Hendrix to Miles Davis to Yo-Yo Ma, this concert is one you'll have to see and hear for yourself. So don't miss it, an unforgettable evening at the J.D. High Auditorium. More information and tickets at jazzandclassics.org, The Jack, Hearthside, and At the Door. For the ukulele wizard, Jake Shimabukuro.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 6th of February, 2013. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "Come live with me and be my love, and we will all the pleasures prove." Christopher Marlowe, born in Canterbury, England, 1564, author of Dr. Faustus and other plays and many poems. He managed to get into Cambridge, even though he was the son of a shoemaker. His school records show that he was often absent from class. He was working for Queen Elizabeth in her secret service. He was a spy. In the 1590s, while he was writing his plays, church officials began to accuse him of atheism, which could be punished at that time by torture. In May of 1593, a warrant was issued for Marlowe's arrest, but he died in a fight over a bar bill before the police could find him. It's the birthday of the poet Deborah Diggs, born in Jefferson City, Missouri, in 1950, one of 10 children of a doctor and a nurse. She got married at the age of 19 to an Air Force pilot who went to Vietnam. She had a child when she was 20, and that was when she began to write poetry. She said, "Kids keep you very close to experiences. You're kind of constantly thrown off track, and that's good for a poet." She wrote two memoirs, Fugitive Spring and The Stardust Lounge, and four collections of poetry. Once she and her husband were out driving. They saw a cow on the side of the road struggling to give birth. The calf was coming out the wrong way. Her husband jumped out of the car to help deliver it, and she wrote a poem about it, The Birthing, which appeared in The New Yorker in October 2006, in which she wrote, "With his whole weight, he pushed the calf back in the mother and grasped the other leg tucked up like a closed wing against the new one's shoulder, and found a way in the warm dark to bring both legs out into the world together, then heaved and pulled, the cow arching her back until a bull calf in a whoosh of blood and water came falling whole and still onto the meadow." It's the birthday of one of the earliest self-help writers, Walter B. Pitkin, born Ypsilanti, Michigan, 1878, wrote The Psychology of Happiness, and also Life Begins at 40. It's the birthday of the journalist Michael Pollan, born Long Island, New York, 1955, whose nutrition philosophy is eat food, not too much, mostly plants. It's the birthday of Victor Hernandez Cruz, born in Aguas Buenas, Puerto Rico, 1954, parents moved to New York City when he was just 6. He grew up on the Lower East Side, started writing poetry when he was a teenager. Victor Hernandez Cruz, who wrote, "Exile and political upheaval have intervened with the lives of great writers and confronted them with the reality that they might have to express themselves in a language other than their mother tongue." Here's a poem for today by Bruce Willard, Great Plains. "I could drive for days without fear of outrunning these patchwork clouds, bridge lines of cumulus this way or that, towards the horizon, midway between one place and another, standing up to the administrations of wind. I like a destination which pulls true, deliberate, but at great distance, like I like the slow, imperceptible progress of knowing but not knowing how far I'll travel today, where I'll find gas for the next leg, or when. Great Plains, a poem by Bruce Willard, from Holding Ground, published by Four Way Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Writer's Almanac there from Garrison Keillor. And welcome back to a Juno afternoon. We're here this afternoon, and tonight it's going to be cloudy skies with a chance of snow and lows around 30 degrees, and tomorrow rain and snow likely with the snow accumulation potential up to 2 inches tomorrow with the snow level, then rising up to the 500-foot level and highs around 35 degrees as it heads into the afternoon, and rain is in the forecast for tomorrow night. Well, I've got another group of great people in the studio with me. We've had a group of this people in the studio all day today, and today we've got folks who are all part of the community schools program, and Susan Ainsworth is the coordinator. Susan, thanks. Suzanne, I'm sorry. Suzanne. Thanks so much. My sister's name is Suzanne. She kills me if I say Susan. Yes, okay, I'm sorry. So it's Suzanne Ainsworth. Thanks so much for coming in. Tell me just a little bit, give me a little overview of what the community and schools, community schools is, the community schools program.
Well, community schools has been a part of the Juno School District for many years, many, many years. And it's a vibrant program that offers a multitude of classes ranging from physical activities to emotional activities, emotional classes. We have 4 new classes this session, and this winter-spring session, we have a special youth activities section geared specifically for kids. And
cool, yeah.
We also have offered for a number of years our fencing and armored sword fighting, as well as fly fishing and fly casting. And
fencing and armored sword fighting? Awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. Okay, well, that's cool. Okay, yeah. So I'm sure those get filled up, right? Those,
they do.
Yeah, we
have many people that keep coming back to them.
Right.
And they take place evenings during the week in different schools. So because our gyms are utilized all winter long, we have the classes in the classrooms, and
yeah.
It's
so
fun.
Cool. The idea of bringing specifically bringing community into schools and having that connection is such a great idea.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've had a great, our Community Schools Express went to all households and post office boxes about 2 weeks ago, and my phone's been ringing off the hook with people registering. We're great. That thank you for asking us here to highlight some of our instructors today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, let's turn to some of the instructors. Patricia Weary is here, and you are a birder.
I'm a birder.
Yes, and you teach. Tell me a little bit about your program.
All right. There are still some openings for youth, and it starts tomorrow night, beginning birding. The kids are going to come 3 Thursday evenings in a row. And we'll have birds, live birds from the Raptor Center. We'll have stuffed birds. We'll have parts of birds. You can handle things. But the idea is to get to understand and enjoy birds and get to a point where you can be a bird detective.
Uh-huh.
And you can figure out clues so that you can learn to appreciate and learn the names of different birds.
It's a cool thing because birds are, of course, so elusive. And, to actually have an experience with a bird up close is mm-hmm. very rare to be
right.
able to do that.
Yeah, the Fish and Game people, their wildlife conservation group, has given us some hands-on items that I think are going to be very interesting.
Very cool.
I hope to have a lot of fun myself, and I hope to share it with some other kids.
And then do you then go out in the field as well?
I'm part of the Audubon Society, and we are going to offer, when the classes are done, we'll be offering a field trip that's designed for these beginning birders.
What are some of the things when you talk about beginning birders? birding. What are some of the kind of principles that you're trying to get across to folks that maybe just have never experienced it before?
First, just what a bird is. You know, how is a bird even a bird? And so we're going to get to try to fly ourselves, and we'll learn that you've got to be light, and we'll find out how a bird makes itself light and what parts of a bird give away clues. It might be that when it lands, it flips its tail up, or it might be that it holds its body very erect or horizontal. It might be bars on its wings, might be a red patch behind its nose. There's all these different clues that help you figure out what a bird is and where you're going to find it. Are you going to find it down low, in the middle, up next to a tree? So all these different things. We'll practice with binoculars. We're going to have to do some indoor practicing in the evening, but we're going to have a fake tree and some fake birds in it, and we'll go around and try to learn how to use the binoculars and figure out how to use these clues to figure out what the birds are.
Amazing. Well, it sounds like a ton of fun. That's right up my alley. I love little birds. They're so magical. I know.
We're doing it for adults.
Okay. Oh, well, very good. Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. So that's the birding one. Another person in the studio with us now is good friend and broadcast partner Shonda Belknap here, also known as Money Honey, and with Taku Roller Sports. But you are doing, you're bringing roller derby kind of roller sports into the schools.
Yeah, actually, we've partnered with community schools. This is our second session. We had five students go the first time, and they actually got to do a little intro demo. So we're taking it from the gym to the showroom and let the skaters show off. So we have another one. It's coming up, and it actually starts Saturday. And it's 10 a.m. to noon, but it's 1 hour session, so we're not wearing anybody out.
Okay.
So we have 8 to 11-year-olds, and then we have the 11 and up.
What kind of gear do they need to participate?
Well, of course, they need quad roller skates, and they need safety gear. But we have some, and we actually were able to secure a little bit of funding for extra gear. So if you are interested, you just need to register and come, and we can get you set up.
Very cool, yeah. And it's such a cool sport. I think roller derby in general is such a cool sport because it can be a sport that even for people and kids who haven't excelled maybe in other sports or have kind of found their niche, it can be that one sport that just connects with people.
Absolutely. The athleticism, of course, our motto for Taku Roller Sports is health on wheels. So anything, if you're on rollerblades, anything that's wheeled, it's just more fun. It's faster. I mean, the exercise that I get skating is more fulfilling, and the opportunity to do it through community schools it's really relatively low cost for 10 weeks of an activity and once a week, and you've done it. And the kids, I haven't seen a single kid leave our first session last fall without a huge smile on their face and a huge sense of accomplishment, and that carries over into other aspects of their class. I mean, of course, I'm going to be a little partial because I have a daughter that also does it. But other kids that hadn't had that experience and just started on skates, they've got that as a life skill, like swimming or biking. So they can come to it later in life and pick it right back up. So that's what we're hoping to just expose them to. And with Juno the way it is, with dark time and, not a lot of outside play, this is the chance to do it. And it's a safe environment, and it's really fun. And, I can't wait to start on Saturday, honestly.
And as you're saying, getting active and being athletic is part of emotional well-being. And that, Kathy Houston, is a part of what you talk about. The emotion code is what you are talking about. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
And so tell me a little bit more about what that means, the emotion code.
The emotion code is a technique to release trapped emotions. And it uses kinetic muscle testing. It's super easy. Anybody can learn it. And it's based on this idea that 10% of our mind is conscious, 90% is subconscious, governing our heart rate, our muscles. And we can use the strength of our muscles to communicate with our subconscious mind. So we just test to see if we feel strong, asking various questions to identify a trapped emotion that might be giving us troubles, causing us to be anxious in our job or something. Maybe it's an old teacher that picked on us back in elementary school. And then we release it using a magnet. It's absolutely that simple, and anyone can learn it. And I'm very excited to be sharing it here in Juneau.
Well, very cool. Well, the wide variety and wide range of things just represented out of these three classes. Suzanne, I just ask you one more question, which is about how many, you don't have to give me an exact number, but about how many different programs are there in the community schools programs?
Well,
I think if I added them all up, it'd be about 20 different classes.
Wow.
We have different sessions.
Sure.
So there's not that many different classes, but several sessions. And we also are offering a new one called Nail Design 101, and that's...
That's perfect for me.
Yes,
that's going to be great.
But, yeah, and there's actually a new one at, called Decoy Carving that is...
Wow, yeah.
To make your own decoys if you're a hunter.
Or if you just want to have beautiful decoys of beautiful birds. Yeah, yeah, either way, right.
Yeah, we have a wide variety. I think the one thing I was just thinking is I didn't tell you my phone number for
sure,
registering.
Sure, let's hear it. Yeah, let's
okay.
hear that.
523-1761. 523-1761. And you also can go on to the Juneau School District website. Go to community schools, and then you'll see all of our classes listed there also.
Well, thanks so much to all of you for coming in. That's community schools. Once again, give that number a call and get involved with that. It's a wonderful way of getting diverse experience and all these great programs, whether it's emotional or physical or educational or all three. All that stuff goes together. Community schools. Thanks so much to all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, next we've got Treasures from the State Film Archives. It's part of the UAS Sound and Motion presentation, and Damon Stubner's with us. Damon, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
And tell me, yeah, you've got a cool thing coming up. It's happening Friday, 7 p.m. Egan Lecture Hall is where it is, part of this UAS Sound and Motion presentation. And you have a really cool job of kind of being a caretaker of all the archives of films.
Yeah,
that we have in the state.
I jokingly tell people I go to work and I watch old movies, and then I kind of like set that aside and say, well, they're not always that good.
Right. But they can be boring, but they're old.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So tell me a little bit about what you're going to cover, some of the treasures, some of the things,
yeah,
some of the unknown and things deep in the archives there.
Well, this year, the Alaska State Library, which is where I work, is part of the Alaska State Library's Archives and Museums, the state division. And this year, last month, we celebrated a kickoff for actually the new construction, the new building that's going on right across
sure,
the street from us.
Yeah,
the SLAM project,
yeah.
A new building that is going to be scheduled to be completed in April of 2016, and it's actually going to house the combined collections of the Alaska State Library, State Museum, and the State Archives. And this year is the fourth year that I've been actually kind of showing these short little historical film festivals, and my goal for this year, it kind of hit me as a eureka moment. Wouldn't it be great if we can have some of the collections from the State Museum and some of the collections from the State Archives as well as the State Library and kind of put them together in this little quick little presentation that I'm doing. And it's actually been kind of fun.
So give me an example of some of the stuff that are you going to be showing these at the? You'll be showing these. Huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
I have
great.
Three. I have three films plus a bonus.
Okay. Okay.
The first film is a tourism promotional film that was actually produced for the Alaska Division of Tourism, called Alaska Beyond Expectations, and it's a very much a typical but very well produced tourism promotional film for the state. We've all seen them before, and I just absolutely love them because sometimes they're corny, sometimes they're great, and
right, yeah, sure,
exactly,
okay. Yeah, cool, all right.
The second film is from the State Library's collection. It's produced by the late Chuck Keane, who was a Juneau filmmaker, and it's actually about the formation of the Alaska Marine Highway. And since this year, the Alaska Marine Highway is celebrating its 50th anniversary, I thought, what a perfect way, perfect time to show this film.
Yeah, that's definitely timely and really. So was it? It was made about the formation of. It was made 50 years ago. Essentially,
it was actually made in 1969. Shortly after the Marine Highway was actually confirmed.
Right. Very cool. Okay, and then a third film as well.
The third film is from the State Museum's collection. It is a film entitled Atka, an Aleutian Village, and it was produced by UAF. And you know, the name kind of sums it up. It's pretty much about the day-to-day life living on the Aleutian village of Atka and the struggles that they must face and the community bonding that they have living out there.
Yeah. And you say when you say film, really you mean all kinds of stuff, right? Films, videos.
Yeah, these are all originally shot and produced on 16mm, but we have all kinds of films and on videos. Some people may remember Betamax. We have Betamax,
yes,
you know, VHS, Laserdisc. It kind of runs the whole gamut. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I'm having a bonus. This is kind of really cool, and I think a lot of people would be interested in this. We have some Alaska State Museum PSAs, public service announcements, that were hosted and narrated by actor James Earl Jones.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Darth Vader.
When I sent my press release out, someone edited my press release and included the voice of Darth Vader.
Right. Just the breathing alone. Yeah. No, that's very cool. All right. So, so there you go. A little bit of a preview of what's going to be happening. And like you say, you do these, you kind of do these once a year, a couple times a year kind of thing?
Once a year.
Yeah, right. And so this is that opportunity for you to hear Damon talk a little bit about, you're going to talk about where you found it and the kind of recovery process.
Sure, why not?
Well. Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure, why not? I mean, it's the Alaska State Library and even the archives and museums. I mean, our goal and our missions are basically to collect and preserve all aspects of Alaskan history and to make these collections available to the public. And this, we consider it as a perfect opportunity for that. And what a better way to do it in a community atmosphere of actually sitting in a movie theater and watching some of these historic films.
Well, really cool. Okay, it's happening out at the Egan Lecture Hall. It's Friday, 7 p.m., part of the UAS Sound and Motion series, and it's the Treasures from the State Film Archives. Damon, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
Okay. Music from Jake Shimabukuru, ukulele master, who will be here on Monday. And exciting that Jazz and Classics is bringing him to town. You can go to jazzandclassics.org to get tickets for that. They are selling out, though. The entire high school looks like it's selling out. Going to listen to beautiful ukulele music on Monday. Well, next with me in the studio is Jeffra Clow from Eagle Crest. Jeffra, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Andy.
It's no problem. And I guess we could go over the weather. It's supposed to be some snow likely happening tomorrow, accumulation up to 2 inches, and some more snow for Thursday night as well. So that's great news.
Yep. The forecast looks promising for some snow. We haven't had any this on our weekend, but we didn't lose any. So that's that's always a good thing with this.
That's a key.
This weather that we have. And then we've got great snow up there. It's good skiing and riding. So we're happy.
Is that what are the conditions up there right now? Just kind of good on the groomed stuff?
Yeah, good on the groomed stuff. A little variable off the groomed due to the weather pattern that we had over the last weekend. But we get some new snow, and we'll be out there searching for powder stashes again, I know.
Absolutely. Well, tell me a little bit about, you've got some scheduling stuff as the daylight gets more and more here, where you've got some scheduling coming up.
Our days are getting longer, and it's, I noticed it today as I'm looking out the window going, wow, it's still really light outside. So starting tomorrow, all our lower lifts go to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so that's great news. And then one other scheduling issue that just wanted to mention to folks, there may be limited instructor availability this weekend. We have clinics for our instructors this weekend that'll pull about approximately 30 instructors off to do some training on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So that definitely affects our instructor availability, but it's good to get those guys out getting some training.
Just tell me about that training. What kind of stuff do they have to go to? What kind of stuff does an instructor have to go through to be an instructor?
Well, any certified instructor, and that's certified through the Professional Ski Instructors of America, it's a national organization, has to have 6 hours of clinic credit every twelve hours every two years, excuse me. So we really encourage our instructors to take a clinic every year. We bring in clinicians, trainers up from down south, and we're bringing up a woman who's on the national team, Professional Ski Instructors America team, and she's coming up and doing 3 days of clinics this weekend. So it's a great way for our instructors to work on their own technical knowledge, skiing skills, and also teaching. And that, of course, goes back, and they bring that information back to all of our guests who come up and learn how to ski and snowboard.
And I'm guessing there's a comparable training type thing that has to go for people who are on the ski patrol as well. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
So tell me, what's that?
Well, that's they have to go through recurrent training as well in terms of in their field of medicine, also avalanche control work. So that's usually most of their training happens early in the season, preseason, and then our instructor training usually we do preseason in-house, but then throughout the season we bring people up from down south.
Yeah, just part of that kind of spreading the knowledge and figuring out what the latest trends are and things like that.
Exactly, yeah. And just keeping our knowledge base up and looking at new trends, new technology, new teaching ideas. So it's a great thing that we have happened, but we do does limit our availability a little bit, so people just be aware that that's happening this weekend.
Okay, and fireworks are coming
fireworks
up. What's
are
happening
coming
tell
up.
Me about the fireworks.
Yeah, the Winter Fireworks Spectacular is Saturday, February 16th, and that is a great event, Andy, and we're really excited about it. We're celebrating winter, and it's been a great winter to celebrate, and so we've got Saturday is Neon Day in celebration of the fireworks. So if you wear neon, you'll get $5 off a lift ticket.
Neon/80s day. I go, might as well just call it 80s
there
day.
There you
too.
go. You get $5 off a lift ticket, or if you're a season pass holder, you can get $5 off the Eagle Crest Grill. So that's a great way to start out the day. We've got music by Tramwreck. They're going to start playing at 3:45. We'll have bonfires. We're going to have the Eagle Crest Grill will be open late. Mountain Lift Coffee will be open late. And then the light show starts at 6 o'clock. With a torchlight parade, and then the best fireworks show around. That's all I have to say.
It's very cool. It's in that canyon there, sort of, so the sound is amazing.
It is. And, you know, the Juneau Fireworks crew, they do a great job with this event, and they tell me every year, they go, okay, this one's going to be even more spectacular than last year. And I'm like, Guy, when are you guys going to stop reaching that bar? You know, been great.
Well, very cool. All right. And then, just one of the many very cool activities Eagle Crest does throughout the year. I'm going to be at the High Gravity Games. That's coming up in about a month or so in March. And that's going to be a real fun thing. There's all kinds of stuff always happening at Eagle Crest. The biggest little mountain in the world.
Yeah.
It's a very cool thing. It's right there. It's all for us. And Eagle Crest is ready to be skied. Anything else you want to go over?
No, just a reminder to check out skijuneau.com. And because the kids are out of school next week, on the 14th through the Tuesday the 19th, I believe it is, we are open daily.
Very cool.
And the snow bus will be running. So parents, get your kids on that snow bus and get them outside and away from your hair.
All right, that's the Eagle Crest Snow Report with Jeffra Clough. Thanks so much for coming in, Jeffra.
Thanks, Andy.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. At least 100 Boy Scouts...